Hey, lovelies. I wanted to just take a minute to thank everyone who came out in person to shop the pop-ups. It is always just so wonderful getting to meet you all in person and getting to hear how you relate to the clothes and to everything that we do here at Impact Fashion. And it was just really, really special. So I wanted to thank everyone who was able to come out. If you weren't able to make it in person, you can still shop online. My last shipping day will be Thursday, April 18th. So as long as you order before then, that'll be the last day anything is going out. You can order and it'll be shipped out to you and up to and including that day. That's the last day. I recommend you order by Wednesday to get your pieces in time for Pesach. I will not be shipping from Friday, April 19th through Tuesday, April 30th. I'll reopen on Wednesday, May 1st. So if you order during that time, it'll go out on May 1st. See my modest designs that are available in sizes 2 through 28 at impactfashionnyc.com or at the address in the American Dream Mall. This episode is the second part of the IDF Army Wives panel. If you haven't listened to last week's, go back and listen to it. Everything will make a lot more sense, and it's also just a really great conversation. So I highly recommend you go back one episode in the podcast feed, listen to it, and then rejoin us here. Enjoy the show. From Impact Fashion, it's Be Impactful, a show about the women making a difference in their own corners of the world. I'm Rifki Itzquitz, and on today's show, we continue the conversation with three women whose husbands are currently serving in the IDF. We discuss the financial side of living in a country at war, what they want those of us outside of Israel to understand, navigating mothering with a father on the front lines, and what their own quiet moments after bedtime look like. I'm glad you brought up this financial aspect of it. If your husband's in the war, that means he's not at work. And I know that, like, Tali, you mentioned before, like, doing all this and also working and everything. How has, like, what has the financial situation been over these last 4 months? Like, the army pays them, but how, talk me through this.
So the army does pay. And there's something called Bituach Leumi, which is essentially kind of like a version of Social Security that covers like part of the salary, but there are a lot of added expenses during a war. So even if your baseline salary is the same, which it should be theoretically, your expenses are a lot higher, whether it's, as Yafi said, ordering out more because you just don't have the emotional, physical, or psychological capacity to make another meal, or it's more doctor's visits because for some reason the second October 7th hit, everyone's sick all the time. More gas bills because there weren't school shuttles running. Literally things that you don't even think of have been impacted. And financially it's been really, really challenging because it was such an unexpected blow. No one really had time to prepare for, you know, we never prepare for an emergency, right? Like we can never know what to expect. But in this case, it wasn't just the engine of the car broke and so you had to replace the engine. It was the entire system is falling apart and everything is leaking. And so it was such a trickle-down effect that I would imagine everybody's feeling it financially without getting into like personal bank details. It's not easy.
Yeah, actually it was so crazy. The week of the October 7th, like my husband was meant to write his 30 days and leave his job. And thankfully he didn't. And he was supposed to go to a different position, a different company, everything. And it saved us that he didn't. And his work was In Israel, it's actually illegal to fire somebody while they're serving, so while they're in Miluim. And financially, like everyone, Yafi and Taligo said, it has put such a strain. Everything just costs more, especially in the beginning. Like, I wasn't leaving my house. I went to my friend's house for 2 weeks because I didn't feel safe in my home. I don't have a miklat, which is a bomb shelter in my house. And I went to a friend of mine, and when I went there, I got a cab, and you're living in somebody else's house, so like I ordered food, or like she supported me for those 2 weeks, but it was insane in terms of financial stuff. But my husband actually didn't leave his job, and it was crazy. In November, his job asked him, like, hey, are you planning on coming back anytime soon? You were gonna quit. Are you able to switch jobs over? And I remember my husband being like, try and fire me, see what happens. Like, just see what we can do. Like, you guys are just paying me the minimum of my salary. Like, my wife and my kids are on their own. Like what are you thinking about here? There were a couple companies that were doing that to people. Thankfully, it wasn't too many, but like I think the whole country felt how the economy went down, and like people were struggling. Every company was struggling, because even women, us women that were at home, we couldn't get to work. We weren't able to do our jobs. I have a job in social, and the first week, my job didn't understand that I couldn't go on Instagram to post anything, because the second I opened up my Instagram, I was bombarded with these videos, and I couldn't like mentally open up my phone to even work. So that took a toll as well. And it's been an insane couple months. Like, thank God, Baruch Hashem, everyone's fine, everyone's okay. You know, we got a roof over our head, we got food, but it's just like the things that you can't cover, you know?
Yeah, like those, the extra things that pop up, or just like the things, like Tali was saying, that you just don't even think about in terms of your whole expense structure completely changing. Has that been your experience also, Yafi?
Yeah, I definitely would say that that's been my experience. It's also hard because, this might be taking the podcast into a dark place, but you can feel free to edit this out if it's too much. But it was mentioned that I got together with friends in the beginning of war, and they really also were my rocks. And we spoke multiple times about the fact that there's a financial stress as well, because you're living day to day, not knowing when you're in a two income household, not knowing, is my husband going to die tomorrow? Chas v'shalom, but is he? And then how do I support my child? Like, I don't think I could do my job properly if my husband were to die and I'm in mourning. But like, I also have a child who needs to eat and like go to the doctor, and those things need money for. And like, how would I function, and what would I do in the future? So like, there that also, like, at least for myself, and I know some of my friends, but certainly for myself, like, has also been an added stress on like the financial part of like feeling like, okay, like even if I got a little bit of money that I could spend, which like isn't a thing right now, but like hypothetically, that like, can I really spend it, or do I need to save up for this like horrific potential like worst case nightmare?
That's awful. Like I can't even wrap my head around that, because it's not even like, see, I deal with like regular Jewish mother anxiety, which I think is something that we are, as a people, we have earned it. You know what I mean? And like, and yes, like I have thought about like, oh, what would my family do if, like, God forbid, my husband was hit by a bus today or something like that. But thinking that in like a theoretical kind of way, as like, stereotypical Jewish mother worrying, versus, oh no, my husband's actually at war and people are actually shooting at him, and this is a reasonable outcome that, nobody hopes for, but is happening to people. That is not a happy place to be at. Like, that's, I can't imagine inhabiting that mental space for and the extended period of time that the three of you have.
Yeah, to be clear, it's not a happy place to be right now.
Thank you. You're right. It's not.
It's the atmosphere. I will say, like, as an entire country, the atmosphere is heavy. And I think every household is handling it differently. But it's, lo aleinu, it should not happen to any of us. If anyone's experienced a shiva, there's like a heaviness when you walk in the door. And even if the mourners are sitting around and telling a happy story, a good memory of the person who they lost, and they might be laughing, that laughter is covered with a heaviness of the loss that they experienced. And that heaviness sits throughout the week of Shiva. And from where I'm sitting, we're all kind of in this Shiva. Since October 7th, this heaviness is sitting on us. And yes, maybe we find laughter and joy throughout our day. And maybe we find ways to lift each other up, but it's all covered with this heaviness. And it's very, very exhausting to live in this constant feeling of being covered in a dark cloud.
Have you found that feeling changing over the course of the last 4 months? Meaning, yes, the situation is still acute, but it's been a while. I mean, I don't know, in the grand scheme of things, 4 months might, you know, we might look back on this and think, what idiots were we at that 4 month mark? But for right now, it feels like a, you know, a hot minute. How have you found that things have changed as the war has progressed?
Yeah, I would like to take that one.
Please.
It's not been a hot minute. We are very much acutely still in this war. And that is something that is so, so critical for our brothers and sisters outside of Israel to realize. While 4 months sounds like a long time, and in the scheme of life, you know, if you think of the life of a baby from birth to 4 months, they go through so much. But those of us who are sitting here in Israel on the front lines of this war, we are as in this war as we were on October 7th when that first siren went off. And while I don't fault anyone outside of Israel for a little bit moving on and a little bit, you know, feeling a little bit of relief that the news cycle has moved on a little bit and they're not faced with these graphic images or they're not hearing about as many deaths in a day. For us sitting here, it is the, at least for me, we are in this war firsthand. Front lines as the day it started. And I think that we can't forget that. We can't forget that there are soldiers who have been in Gaza since day one, who are still there, who have showered maybe twice since the first day of the war, who have seen their moms once since they got in, who have pushed off their weddings and are still not married, women who have given birth and their husbands haven't met their babies. And yeah, 4 months might be a long time when you're sitting on a beach in Florida, but when you're sitting in Israel and your husband is next to a friend of his who's fallen, it's the same as day one.
Anyone else want to respond to that?
Sorry, that was a little harsh.
Back to what Polly said, like, as much as like to somebody who's not living this reality, it might sound like harsh. That really is how everybody I know here feels. Like, it's very natural to not feel it as strongly if you're not in something. That's normal, you know? Nobody would say otherwise. But the reality is that, like, because we are still in it, like, it doesn't really feel so far off. Like, for me, the biggest thing that's changed is really how, like, people on the outside relate to me. Like, you know, like the, oh, but like your husband's being released soon, right? And I want to be like, and even if he is, so he'll go back in March, he'll go back in April. Like, you know, maybe he survived now, but like, will he be able to say the same by the end of that? Like, we want to go and be able to like visit my family. And it's like very hard to like not be constantly like living in this, like, is this the last time we do X together? Is that like, very much so, like, we are still in the mental headspace that we were on October 7th of everything is up in the air, everything is terrifying, and just because this has become our new normal that we've, like, learned to function in doesn't mean that, like, emotionally it's any better. Like, sure, there might have been habits that I was doing in the beginning of the war that, like, thankfully I'm not physically doing those things anymore, like staying up all night, not able to sleep. Like, yeah, I can sleep 8 hours now, like, assuming that there's no siren, assuming that my kid isn't awake, etc. But emotionally, mentally, no, like, the biggest difference for me has just been how people relate to me, which for the most part is kind of an assumption of like, oh, but like it's a little better, and like it's not a little better. Like the last time Nadav came home, he went to a friend's funeral, and the time before that he went to somebody he grew up with's funeral, and like it doesn't feel better. It doesn't feel any better.
So my husband, actually, I'm in a bit of a different boat. It seems like I've closed the door with my husband being gone, because he is meant to get out in the next couple days, and he's meant to like return to civilian life. We don't know for how long. They're telling him a month, they're telling him 6 weeks, it could be tomorrow, you know. But I'm kind of going through the past 4 months felt like I can't say even a dream. It's more of like that nightmare where I look back and I'm like, I can't believe I just did that. I can't believe I woke up with my kids every morning and I tried to keep things as normal as I could for them. And I went about my day and I tried my hardest not to look at social media, and I tried to reach out to as many people as I can to kind of stay sane and, you know, feel like I'm keeping my head above water. It genuinely seems crazy to me that past four and a half months have passed, and like my husband's home and he's trying to kind of get used to civilian life, and like my girls aren't telling me like anytime that he leaves the house, like, is Abba coming home? Like, is he going to be a chayal? Is he going to be a soldier? And my kids met the pilot, my kids' kindergarten teacher, basically, she's 2 years old. And she was talking to me today. She's like, you know, like your daughter's still talking about your husband, like Abba Chayal, Abba Chayal. And she'll go up to all the parents that come into the house and like be like, Abba Chayal, you know? And parents have come up to me and been like, oh, your daughter is saying this. And I think all of us in the house are still kind of getting over that headspace and that life we were living. And we just went through the past 2 weeks of like trying to get used to for it not to be weird that he's home, because it's weird that it's weird. So we're just kind of trying to find our way. And like, how I think it was Tali that mentioned, like, you're a full-time person, you know what you're doing in your house, it's all on you, you know what you're doing. And then all of a sudden, like, your husband's home again. For the two of you guys, it's like for 24 hours or for a week or for whatever it is. And like, my husband's home right now, and I'm like, wait, I need to figure this out again. I need to figure out how to go about my day. So I've entered like that next stage. And don't get me wrong, the fact that we still have soldiers that are dying every day, and to see all the families of the hostages, to still kind of like to understand that it's been almost 140 days that they're not here, and people are still in America, in Canada, all over the world, still saying these things like, you know, genocide and everything. And it's like, guys, like, just bring our hostages home, you know? I think that's still very real. And we still have it going on here in Israel about trying to get our hostages home and this war going on. And it's, I think this whole world right now is in such a balagan that I'm kind of just trying to focus on getting up every morning and being like, thank God my husband's here, and thank God my girls are okay and everyone's fine. And it's weird to kind of be in a routine and try and get to work and to school and trying to get back into life. But yeah, it's not easy, but we're taking it. Everyone's just taking it day by day.
If you don't mind sharing, how old are your daughters? I know you mentioned one of them was two. How old is the other one?
My oldest is four.
So what, like, I can't imagine that you haven't noticed changes in them and how they're dealing with this, especially, you know, the extended absence of their Abba, of their father. What has like parenting and mothering been like during this time for you?
So in the beginning, when the sirens started and my husband left, I think it was after the second or the third one, and we were still running down into our bomb shelter, and we live in a building where there's a bomb shelter for every six apartments. So we were there, and the first little while I wasn't telling. My youngest was about a year and and 7 months. So she wasn't really, she was like, oh, you know, like I tried to sing with her and be like, oh, we're all going to get together. We're going to be with our neighbors. My oldest, she had the hardest time. I wasn't telling her anything about what was going on. I tried to protect, what I thought was like protecting her. And it actually turned into like this anger towards my husband, like to her Abba. She's like, at one point I was like, we can go see Abba. We have an hour that we can go see him. Your aunt's going to take us. We're going to drive down. We're going to be able to see him for an hour. We're just going to go hug him. And she's like, no, I'm not going to go see him. You have to tell him he has to come here and stop being a soldier, like stop being a khayal, and then I'll see him. And this was like a week where they haven't seen each other. And it was, I think, one of the hardest things to go through, where like my kids didn't know what was going on and I thought I was trying to protect them. And then after speaking to a child psychologist, she was like, you have to tell them something, you have to, you know, incorporate it. It was, I think that was the hardest part of like, how do you tell your kids what's going on? How do you explain to your kids that your father's a soldier, but what does that mean? What does it mean he's going to go protect his country? He's not home with me. He's not putting me to bed. He's not waking up. And I don't, like, when I'm waking up and I don't see my Abba, what, like, this is weird. What's going on? He abandoned me. And that was the hardest part. And them not being able to see him or speak to him was the hardest part out of everything, was just trying to protect them and keep them to a routine. I think we can all relate to like our kids going to gun here to kindergarten and other kids speaking about like what's going on, that there are bad guys, that they're going to come into our house, that they're going to take us. And that sort of information for a four-year-old to hear and to explain it to a four-year-old is, it was beyond. It was like trying to say, no, your Abba's a khayal, he's going to keep us safe, he's keeping the country safe. But that was, I think, the hardest part. My youngest, my two-year-old, we live right next to a highway, and anytime she hears a motorcycle or ambulance sirens or a firefighter sirens, she covers her ears and she goes, Azaka, Azaka, which basically means siren. And me and her sister will try and calm her down and be like, no, baby, it's okay. It's just a motorcycle. It's just this. And I think a lot of kids now still have some sort of trauma with that.
I don't even know what to say to that. I am in a similar stage of motherhood as you are. And my husband doesn't always make it home for bedtime, which, whatever, office stuff, it happens. Not the end of the world. And it's always like, daddy, daddy, daddy. I'm like, yeah, daddy's coming. Don't worry. You know, you'll see him in the morning. It's fine. Go to bed. And not being able to say that confidently, you know, not being able to say that, you know, aside from the fact, like, no, he might not be here in the morning, but also just not being able to say, like, yeah, you'll for sure see him again. It's fine. I have no words. I can't imagine what that's like for all three of you, really, as mothers, to go through this with your kids.
Yeah, it's been really hard basically seeing your child be traumatized in real time and knowing that you can't stop that trauma.
Yafi, your son is younger, right?
He's a year and 8 months now, a year and 9 months.
So what how have you been seeing him process this? Like, he doesn't really know what's going on.
So in the beginning of the war, I counted myself lucky because, similar to like what was just said, and also Tali, a lot of our friends have older kids, slightly older, significantly older, and either very much so understood what was happening, unfortunately, or didn't fully understand, but understood enough that like they were having to have these horrific conversations with their children of trying to explain without explaining too much. And so I was like, oh, I'm so lucky, like my baby's still a baby, he doesn't understand anything, but yada yada yada. And kids grow, and it's been months at this point, and at some point in the last few months, he started understanding that Nadav's not home, and he started missing him more, and I started avoiding saying daddy or dada in front of him, because then he would start crying, and he'd start looking around the room for him, and then it would be like awareness washing over him of like, wait, he's not here, I haven't seen him in a while, I want to see him. So like, that was like, okay, fine, like, sad, but like, it could be worse, you know? And then like in the last month or so, like, I don't know, I guess his little brain is growing and he really, really has started to like become more aware. And every single time that Nadav has been able to come home, in the beginning of this month, he came home for a couple of days. And anytime that Nadav walked out of the room, he like had a full scale panic attack. Like, would start like hyperventilating and like like looking around the room for him and like panicking, and like it's heartbreaking seeing that on like somebody so little who like you can't explain things to them. It's heartbreaking seeing it on older children who unfortunately understand all too well what's happening. I think it's horrible at any age. It's horrible no matter what age your child is, seeing them literally be traumatized in real time.
Tali, based on your Zoom profile picture, you have older children, yeah. Right?
Yeah, I have a little bit of a different perspective. My kids are 14, 11, 8, and 6, all girls. From my perspective, one of my biggest challenges, at least in the beginning, specifically with my oldest, was managing my expectations of her and making sure not to view her as another parent. While I needed her help, and she definitely had to step up, and she did that beautifully, I found myself catching myself, and like, I would get frustrated that she wasn't doing certain things when really that wasn't her job. And it's okay to ask for help from your children, and you should, and there should be certain expectations, but to remember that a child doesn't replace a parent, and a child is still a child, even though she's 14 and she's mature and she's exceptionally helpful. She's also still a kid, and she's mourning and scared in her own way. And going down, you know, the line of the kids, each one had their own kind of experience through this. But, you know, recognizing the roles of each child and kind of how to parent each of them based on their own individual fears or challenges they were going through during this time and are continuing to go through during this time is really, really hard. And I'm very lucky because my parents actually live in Israel. So even though I made Aliyah before them, they live here now. And so I did have that support. But at the end of the day, I'm still my children's only parent home. And so all that responsibility that comes with being a parent was on me, whether it was the logistical stuff of doing the carpools and packing the lunches and checking the hair for lice at the end of the day and whatever else happens on a logistical level, or the emotional and psychological support that each child needs. That's all on me all the time. And there's nobody to share that burden with. And while there's such beautiful support being provided by the community that I live in, and I don't take a second of that for granted, there's just certain things that nobody can do for you but yourself. And I think that being a parent in this situation makes you realize that, you know, as we said at the very beginning of this conversation, we have strength within us that we didn't know we had. And we step up in ways that we never wanted to and find, you know, resilience within ourselves to be the person that they need. And it's only late at night when they're all in bed and they're all asleep and the door is closed. That's when we can finally say, am I okay? And that's when at least I found myself finally allowing myself to be scared or to mourn or to cry or to zone out or whatever it is that I needed. But there isn't so much room for that when you're doing this on your own. And that was one of the many challenges of like parenting during this war.
What have you found
those, like you said, when the door's closed and, you know, everyone's asleep and it's just you, what have those moments been like for each of you as you have maybe tried to find time to catch your breath, if that's even possible?
For myself, I don't let those moments happen often, just because once those moments start, it's very, very hard to stop them. And processing what happened and mourning and fear and all those negative emotions, once I let them out, it's very, very hard to let them, to get them back in. And because I'm not just surviving for myself, I'm surviving for other people. I have to function for my children and my community. I couldn't and still can't fully let myself go to that place. So it very rarely happens. And there definitely needs to be some kind of decompression that happens after this. But I don't think that I'm there yet. I think that I still need to like hold on a little bit longer till there's a little bit more of some kind of stability. And then I can let go. But till there's someone else to catch the fall, I still need to be that person.
I'm just like listening to you guys, and I'm genuinely in awe as to how much time has passed and what we've all been through and how our reality is just changing. Hopefully for the better, but just to see our kids go through all this stuff. When it comes to kind of closing the doors, my girls never really slept throughout the 4 months. Within like 2 hours after they went to bed and I could just like breathe for a minute, I couldn't go on Instagram, because as that was my escape, you know, to be a potato on the couch for a couple hours and just scroll through memes, it became a really, really dangerous place, especially the beginning of the war. So I never really let myself have that, take that mask off. I think at one point I saw a video of some of the hostages being released, and I remember crying, really, like I was just crying from happiness. And my oldest daughter came in and she was like, "Mama, like, why are you crying?" And I was like, no, I promise, it's happy tears. It's really good tears. And she's still so young to understand that, like, you can cry from joy. And she didn't understand why I was crying, because I couldn't let them see me cry. In the beginning, I would run to the bathroom or I would close the door at any point when we weren't leaving the house and we were still at home. I don't think I, even now, like my husband's been home for about a week and a half. Like, I don't think I've let myself decompress. I don't think I even know how to let that go yet, because it still feels like, I mean, it doesn't feel that way. It's reality. Like, we're still in this pressure, you know, of like this lachetz of what's going to happen. You know, there's talk about something going on in the north, and my husband's going to be gone, and I have a bag packed if something happens. Like, I don't think I've let any of that stress leave my body yet.
Do you have any idea how you're going to go about doing that when you're ready to let it go?
Oh my gosh, no idea. I have absolutely no clue. It seems kind of weird, like, to even imagine, to think about a vacation or to think about going on a, you know, on a girls trip somewhere, or to think about any of that stuff. It just feels weird with everything that's still going on.
Yeah, I hear how that would be very, very strange. Yaffe, what have those quiet moments been like for you?
I think the longer that the war goes on, the more that the quiet moments have been filled with kind of what I already said, just the realization that, like, until this is over, it's not gonna really feel over for me internally. And until it is over, and we are post-war, there's a lot of things, kind of like Tali said, that I feel like I can't let myself fully unravel emotionally or mentally, because it will unravel me as well. And at the moment, there isn't somebody who's able to like catch things if I drop them right now in our home. And also the realization that kind of like what was just brought up now, that even when our husbands, please God, are released, and hopefully that should be soon, I'm still not really going to be able to unravel, because the war isn't over. And I know that just because we survived up until now doesn't mean that that's what it's going to look like, and that I don't know what's coming around the corner, and therefore, like, still essentially in fight or flight mode. And I think that until the war is over, a lot of things are going to be hard to do. I'm not the best when I'm in like a hard situation at, like, you know, doing self-care and self-love and all the buzzwords that people love to use these days. And I honestly don't know. Like, I might get to a point, I know that like my husband has like very much so said and felt like whenever I'm released, like I need some form of like a breather. So like he needs that. I'm happy to like make that a reality for him. But like for myself, like, I don't know that I would be able to take a breather right now, just because I'm so just stuck in it, and stuck in the fear of what could be, and the realities that we're juggling every single day. And yeah, but I would love a girl trip. That sounds like
where are we going? Where are we meeting?
I've never been skiing, so you know, I'd be down for that.
Skiing? You can't talk to me about skiing in February in New York. I need warm.
I'd love some snow.
The Florida girl, right? Yeah. This has been eye-opening in all of the best and worst ways, if that makes any shred of sense. Thank you. Thank you to all three of you, not only for coming on and sharing your story and perspective, but for everything that you have been doing while you have been called to be the heroes that nobody wants to be. So just thank you on behalf of all of us who have no idea what it's like, and hopefully now maybe understand just a little bit more. Y'all are awesome.
Rifki, I just want to thank you seriously for doing this. This is not easy. Not easy to talk about, and certainly not easy to ask people. And like, you know, we're all like one nation. It's not easy to like talk to, you know, your brothers and sisters about, like, even if you want to be there for them. So I just really do want to thank you for giving us this platform to, you know, make our realities more understood by more people. And just thank you. Thanks for listening.
Can I add one thing?
Please.
Sorry. I want to say, to the point of what happens next, or kind of letting that pressure out a little bit. I heard once that when we experience a loss, in the immediate aftermath of that loss, it's like there's a hole in the living room. And in the beginning, when you walk through the house and you walk through the living room, you fall into the hole. And every time you fall in, you experience that pain over and over and over again. And as time goes by, you learn to walk around the hole. But the hole is always there. And right now, I think what we as a nation are experiencing is our house has a huge hole in it. And we're all just in the middle of that hole trying to figure out how to get out. But hopefully, by continuing to strengthen each other and to take care of each other and doing things like what you, Rifki, are doing, is reaching out and trying to understand and support what we're all going through, we can learn how to walk around the hole. And hopefully, as a nation together, we can learn to support each other and help each other out of the hole, and to live. The pain's going to be there, but to learn to live with that pain, with the help of each other.
Yeah.
Amen.
Seriously. Amen. On that note, thank you so much to the three of you. This has been really incredible.
Thank you, Rifki.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to learn more about Yafi or Tali, you can do so in the show notes. Last week's episode was the first half of this panel. Listen to it wherever you're hearing this one. The Be Impactful podcast is a project of Impact Fashion, the clothing line I created because I believe that we are all deserving of the beautiful things life has to offer. See my modest designs that are available in sizes 2 through 28 by going to impactfashionnyc.com. Access all of that by swiping up on the cover art. There are currently 17 people listed by Oragu Note as a recalcitrant party. View their names, photos, locations, and details of their cases by visiting getora.org/recalcitrant-parties. The episode art was designed by Michelle Moses, original music composed by Nissan Fetman. This episode was produced and hosted by me, Rifki Itwit. Catch me on all the socials at impact.fashion.nyc. As always, here's to making an impact together. And a little bit of a heads up, I'm going to be taking the next 2 weeks off in celebration of Pesach, and I will see you back here in 3 weeks with another fantastic episode. You've spent quite a bit of time listening to me, and now it's my turn to listen to you. By just answering a few questions in a short listener survey, you can share feedback about show content you'd like to see in the future and help me shape Be Impactful into the best showcase of female voices out there. Even better, once you've completed the survey, you'll receive an exclusive code to shop at impactfashionnyc.com as my thanks. The survey is short and sweet and will help me keep bringing you content you love. Just go to impactfashionnyc.com/survey. Again, that's impactfashionnyc.com/survey, and thank you so much in advance.